And hey, shit, we're live now. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the podcast. Please excuse my obscenity. Here is Jacob Blackman, Mike Mylar, Jim Seals, Owen Casey Stevens, Jason Tondro. Michael, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Michelson.
Michelson. Nice to meet you, sir. And just to prove to everyone that we are a professional and high production value podcast, we have to play this. Hang on. Dancing. There's more every time. It's fantastic. So today we have summoned this table to talk about Loki on Disney Plus. And I'll put the trailer up on silent in the background so we have something to look at. But YouTube doesn't hit me with any takedown requests. And Michelson, since you're the new member of the roundtable, what are your thoughts on this show?
I've been having a great time. It sort of fluctuates for me between, being a little bit above, Captain America and a little bit below Captain America, just cause, I think Captain America has some more interesting things to say, and some more important things to say, than the show. But I've so far found the show to be more consistently like a fun, consistently enjoyable time. There hasn't been like, why are we doing this? What's going on? Where I had that like almost with the entire sort of like Madripoor moment, where like, why are, if we're talking about the things that we're talking about in Captain America, why do the things that are happening here need to happen here? If right, just sort of like some writerly questions that I'm not yet having with Loki. And then WandaVision just hit all of the right buttons for me. It has things that I think are interesting to say, and I found that consistently enjoyable. So I've been having a great time.
Sweet. All right. Well, hey, let me start off the conversation with a quiz question I was pestering Jason with offline. First, spoiler alert, if you don't want spoilers from the show, you should turn off the podcast now. Find something else on YouTube. There's a guy in Norway who has an outfit called Frog Leap Studios. He does a great heavy metal cover of Ra Ra Rasputin by Boney M. You should find that. That's a lot of fun for 3 minutes. If you're still here, you want to hear spoilers, so don't complain. End of episode 2. Is that a female Loki variant, or is that the Enchantress?
Well, I think we have to... Let's lay out some facts first. Mm-hmm. The character is credited at the end of the episode as simply the variant.
Yes.
So, and when Loki refers to the character as Loki, she's like, oh, don't call me that. Now, so my question is, what name does she prefer? TVA says that she's a variant. I think the answer to your question is she could be both, Mike, right? She could be a variant of Loki that refuses to think of itself as Loki and instead claims the title of the Enchantress. And it just occurred to me, they even placed that thread when Loki specifically refers to her power as using enchantment on these minions.
Yep.
Right? Yeah.
All right. So, internet nerd hole, forgive me. Someone did a screen grab of this episode and found one of the forums Loki was perusing that referenced a Sylvie Loki daughter, which, if you're familiar with Loki's full name of Loki Loki's son, in Old Norse, it's patronymial naming. So that's who they're thinking she might be.
Where does this Loki daughter come from again?
They did a screen capture of one of the forums Loki was perusing at the TVA, and they saw her name mentioned. And apparently she was a character in one of the Young Avengers arcs, where she was created by Loki to sow discord and chaos among the Young Avengers or something like that. So I don't know. It's just an internet nerd hole rumor. I'm not sure if it's...
It sounds like more meat for the Young Avengers dinner that I'm insisting that they're cooking here. With these short series. No, like WandaVision, we got two. We got Hawkeye's daughter's coming up in the movie. And then we had another, we're going to get Elijah coming out of Captain America eventually.
Yeah, I think Mike's right that they are certainly setting up those dominoes. I don't know that they necessarily have decided they're definitely knocking them over that way. But one of the things that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been really good about is setting up hooks for later use if they are so inclined. So I definitely think there's someone there who is aware what all these things could mean. And one of the things that they have to deal with that the comics don't is that their actors are actually getting older.
Yeah.
Right. In the comics, you just switch artists and switch writers and the characters can be perpetually 32 forever. Yeah. But in the movies, the actors are actually aging. And yes, the aging technology visually is improving, but it ain't there yet. And eventually these people will in fact die. In fact, sadly, we've already had a loss for both of them.
And also, in addition to getting too old, they can also get too expensive.
Yeah, absolutely.
An actor like Chris, like Captain America, you know, he won't come back no matter how much money you throw at him.
But he will. He will. He will come back if you throw enough money at him. And right at the moment, I don't know that Marvel needs to worry about, oh, our actor is too expensive. We're only going to make $782 million on this movie, so I don't want to spend 70 of it on the actor. But it is true that if you can get an actor for $7 million, that is another $63 million worth of executive hot tubs you can buy. So yeah. I absolutely think that is a factor. But I had long thought that it was a shame, for example, that the son of Spider-Man, Spider-Girl character that they did in the comics for a while, that they shunted off the continuity option to be able to do that in the mainstream comic, at least until they retconned it, by having him not have had a daughter anymore, because there comes a point where 20 years have passed. And one of the really interesting things about, for example, Harry Potter is that that character in general aged at about the speed of the people that was reading it.
That's right.
And I'm not a huge fan of a lot of other things that came out of that, but it means that right now there are people who are being exposed to, you know, Iron Man's daughter, for example, are going to get old at a certain rate. And those people could be very interested in watching characters age with them. And Disney Plus gives them a whole new venue to do stories that wouldn't necessarily make good movies.
Yeah, this is actually one of the best things, in my opinion, about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is that the simple fact of the way actors age means that you cannot just tell the comic book story over and over again. You must change the story because you have all these physical realities of how we make movies that are different than how we make comics.
So just to continue on this stupid internet nerd hole, this character here is the one that they were saying, Sylvia Lustin, not Sylvia Loki's daughter, but in The Dark Reign. Oh God, I feel my virginity reinstating as just as I read this. Forgive me. During the Dark Reign plotline in like 2008, when Asgard was in Braxton, Oklahoma, so Jacob's backyard, this girl in Oklahoma wakes up one day with magical powers, decides she's a secret Asgardian, and starts, you know, showing up as occasional character in the Young Avengers. Turns out it was just Loki messing with her, and you know, all of her powers and ideas about being an Asgardian all came from Loki. So. It seems like kind of a deep cut to be referencing in a show, but there you go.
I'm more inclined to go with Jason's impulse that it's just going to be also, you know, the Enchantress. Like, it's Loki variant, but like it's how they're going to source the Enchantress in the MCU. Because like that seems so convenient. Like I'd be hard pressed not to take that route.
There's also a long tradition of a female Loki in Marvel Comics, so they might not be moving towards the Enchantress, or they might not resolve that issue at all. We only have a few episodes of this entire series, and I don't know yet if they very clearly plan to do another Captain America and the Winter Soldier series. They very clearly do not currently plan to do another WandaVision, and I just don't know where they're going to come down on Loki, so... They don't have to settle one way or the other on this character. She may, in this arc, only be what she is presented to be, a dangerous variant they are trying to deal with.
So I kind of think we put the cart in front of the horse. Like, we're not talking about the episode. We're talking about the implications of the episode. Like, yeah. We're not talking about the merits of the episode.
So talk about the merits of the episode. Get in there.
I haven't talked about the pilot either, so you know that's fair game.
Well, the reason why I brought Michelson in, and I thought, you know, he's an important voice to have here, is he is an ardent defender of Thor the Dark World. We've had so many long conversations on my patio about him trying to convince me that Thor the Dark World has merit, and I'm like, he has talked me into rewatching it, like. But I do feel like this is like what what would you say, Michelson? Like the eighth time that we've had a rehabilitation of that film in other media for Marvel?
Yeah, they definitely want people to like a movie that almost nobody likes. yeah, like I you know, my point of contention with the movie is like it you know, like everybody wants to give that movie like a really big F on it. Like that is a solid like B minus, solid B movie. Like there's a lot to love in that movie. There's a lot that's going on in that movie that's great. And I will you know, and I will concede to a lot of the points that people make that like no, like the stakes go from like saving New York to the universe is at risk like immediately. The Dark Elves aren't super interesting. And so when they're on screen, they're not really, you know, like, okay, like anything else would be so much better than what's happening right now. Yeah. But then you get, some of these, I mean, you get this deepening of like Odin becomes better and better with each movie. You know, continuing to like the future performances, improving, like past performances. And there's nothing that Anthony Hopkins can do about Odin sleeping. That's text. He has to do that. right. But you know, like you know, the rage that he comes with, you know, you are a vain, cruel, greedy, you know, young boy. Right. Like the more we find out about Odin, which we find out a lot about in this one, and as we find out about in Ragnarok, and as we find and you know, as and the themes that get touched on a little bit in this too, right? That the life that Odin has led directly influences how he has raised his two sons, right? That's where like the life Odin led gives us Thor, and the life that Odin led gives us Loki, right? And no small part, right? This show, like one of the things that Taika Waititi really sort of like brought to the forefront that's somewhat always there is a conversation, right, about colonialism and what do you do when you have benefited from it but have not necessarily partaken in it, right? And that's right, and that's something that Odin has kind of had to deal with and has come to a place with, right? And it's something that Thor sort of has to grow with, and he definitely, as he does through one a little bit, I find Thor in the first one through that lens, which is a lens that I view a lot of things, being native, growing up in indigenous. My mom is, Elmer's glue. So, which is why I have, this, complexion. Right. But like, and then Taika Waititi, like, really brings that to the forefront. And then, you know, we start out here. One of the first places we go to when we go back in time is, right, 1858, to what there was no place called Oklahoma in 1858, right? That's Indian territory. Oklahoma doesn't become a state for another 50 years, right? And then there's the brief reference, right? Time travel to, like, somebody time traveled to go get, to go drill for oil here, right? And this is in the pilot. Right, they're directly referencing these Osage murders that happened in the 1920s because a lot of oil is found in Oklahoma. This is going to be the subject of Martin Scorsese's film that's based on the book Killers of the Flower Moon, right? Which again we're looking at a lot of right, which these murders happened in the 1920s, which is right, very close to when you have the Tulsa race riots that also happened right in Oklahoma, right? So there's this conversation that continues to happen and is continuing to play through these Thor movies that I think is really interesting, and a lot of people just sort of like write off some of the less fun elements of the thing is like, well, it's not Thor being cool, so it's not interesting, right?
Can I jump in for a minute?
Absolutely.
Can we rewind to, you were talking about that scene in Oklahoma. Can we go back to the other flashback, the one that goes back to medieval France?
Yeah.
Does anybody know, like, when I saw that, I thought it was going to be a Holy Blood, Holy Grail reference. Like, you know, that if you know that whole prophecy,
yeah,
that the Templar treasure is buried in Provence. And I thought that the church where they were was part of that conspiracy theory. but I couldn't verify that in my research. Does anybody have any insight on that particular flashback? Why the writers or Loki's variant place and time?
Here's my insight into it. It's a place and time that you can do very, very cheaply by walking into a cathedral.
Yeah, but okay. All right.
I mean, seriously, they've got a limited budget, right? So we never saw the outside. We only saw one person that was in local time clothing. They only had to CG in a single window. The whole rest of it is an actual cathedral that allows them to pick a time and place to say, hey, he's still gathering up the reset charges.
But if Michelson's correct at this point in the Oklahoma scene, is a specific reference to a historical murder. I find it dubious that they picked that date on purpose, but the Provence date is just random.
The thing is that if you pick any point in time in Oklahoma after the beginning of colonization, you can easily point to a murder, because Oklahoma's history, I mean, I'm a native Oklahoman, I live here now. Its history is a history of blood-soaked betrayal, lies, and failure to maintain treaties. You know, to a certain extent, natives were driven to Oklahoma because the general powers thought there was not going to be anything there of value. So we wouldn't ever want it. It's a desert. No one can or should live there. Oh, no, there's oil, and that changed everything. The Tulsa riots, which we were mentioning, weren't even taught in Oklahoma schools until like this year. I originally ran into them as a native Oklahoman while doing military research. So I think the more relevant point, in my opinion, and Michelson may well disagree with me, is that some of those ideas are being brought in perhaps subtly. That doesn't mean that they are the main driving point of those scenes, but that someone with a different point of view is getting to make those decisions and is bringing in some awareness of what that looks like. I don't think it is we are having all of the time scenes point to specific moments. I think it is someone with an awareness of what the real history of and impact of colonialism is getting some of that into the subtext of the choices that are made.
I would not put it past these creators to at some point in like the penultimate episode have that moment of revelation where Loki pieces everything together and everything does have a meaning, probably lending itself towards colonialism, as Michelson pointed out. There is one moment in this second episode that occurred that I was like I called it 3 minutes before it happened, and then it happened exactly the way I thought it would be, which was the Pompeii scene. So the Pompeii scene, it gets introduced as the idea that this variant, this to be determined character who gets an introduction, who says, you know, it's not about you, is using apocalypses to hide, you know, couple of tracks. Like, doesn't matter what you do in the apocalypse, as long as everything gets destroyed, the timeline continues on them. I was a little disappointed that I just said, oh, we're going to Pompeii. And then immediately the next scene will end Pompeii. Like, I understand why they chose it, because it is a moment in time that is a cultural touchstone for us, that we can also look towards, and we kind of know what the idea of it is. But for me, it's kind of wanted to be a little surprised. But I do think there was a little bit of that consideration, because, you know, you can't put it, even though we get Katrina imagery later on in the episode, they do make it clear that the Katrina imagery later on is like, it's from like 2050 or some such date.
Yeah.
Maybe I've been ruined by Cap and Falcon, but I was thinking, oh, these are some cool things they're setting up. And then I thought, oh, wait, they're not going to pay this off. But it could just be a cynical viewer, and I don't know.
Well, I mean, a lot of people thought that there were things being set up in WandaVision that did not have a specific payoff. I think some of the television shows are still trying to find their footing on exactly what experience they're delivering, because these are paced not only differently from the movies, but they are paced differently from each other. They don't have a set, hey, all of these will be exactly this many minutes long and have exactly this many episodes. I do think that to a certain extent, some of it is that the journey should be part of the fun, and they get to shine a light into corners of the MCU that don't have to have a payoff because they've got more elbow room.
Yeah. One thing to consider is they're making these like movies and not like TV shows. So every episode has a director who's boss. There is no showrunner with an overarching vision. I think that explains some of the missteps and some of the incongruities.
Well, so. What I was going to say earlier, Michael, someone was talking about like how like accessible this is, that like there's like such a low barrier of entry for this show compared to all the other MCU shows that we've gotten so far. Like, you, even if you haven't seen it, they're like, here, we're literally going to replay all of the important scenes for you in the show so we know that you know what we're talking about. Yep. And yeah, it definitely feels like Loki was made with the mind, like, we want to catch the largest number of people we can with this net. And I didn't get that feeling off of Captain America. It was definitely more inclusive than it had to be, but it wasn't like that. It wasn't like get them all.
And to take a sort of a pullback approach, since we didn't have a conversation about episode one, it's very telling that they gave Loki sex as fluid. Like, this show is coming out in Pride Month. We've already established that his gender is fluid on the form that you see at the end of every episode. You can, there's a screen grab of it and it's highlighted. You can look it up on the internet. Google is your friend. And now we'll introduce to a variant of Loki at the end of this episode who is presenting as feminine. I think that's sort of like these showrunners, like Marvel knows what they're doing and they knows the audience that they're communicating to. So like my misgivings about the episode in particular, like not being surprised or just counting minutes until it's you at the end of the first episode, you know, that's just me as someone who studies storytelling. I'm like, oh, you have a character who hates himself. He has to fight himself. And then ultimately he has to somehow find a way to love himself. Like, that's the character arc that we'll sort of, it feels like we're narratively on.
Yeah. I guess we should point out that Loki has been gender swapping in the comics for at least a decade now. So it's not something new.
I believe, and I could be wrong, but I believe it was introduced in J. Michael Straczynski's run when everyone was resurrected and Loki was resurrected as a woman presenting as someone who, like, I'm not evil, folks, but I'm still evil. But I'm not evil, folks. Like, I want to be a good sister to you, brother, kind of thing, when they were actually based in Oklahoma.
Yeah. It's interesting. So I actually have a heart stop in about 2 minutes, take my kid to a Grav Maga class, which is, unfortunately, that's a hard barrier I have. Jacob Blackman has been unusually quiet this episode. I'd like to hear what he thought about the first two episodes. Jacob?
I have been a fan of Loki so far, in regards to some of the things that Michael Zinn has said in regard to Thor Ragnarok. I have enjoyed all the Thor movies. I liked all of those. The only thing I didn't like in regards to one of the Thor movies, and Thor Ragnarok, was that they played the destruction of Asgard as a joke. That was the only thing I have not enjoyed about the Thor movies thus far. Otherwise, I have thoroughly enjoyed them and their grand cosmicness, because cosmicness is one of the things I love about comics. It's all the different scales you can play on, and Loki being that time cosmic scale, I've really been enjoying that. So it's been pretty good and entertaining for me.
Cool. Hey, just a thought, the idea about a Young Avengers setup. Wouldn't it be cool if Loki died and was resurrected as Young Loki from the Young Avengers?
That would be amusing.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even have to do that. They could just have a Young Loki variant that we know escapes the TVA. So we could have Loki and Young Loki running around at the same time.
See, I honestly thought the kid in the chonch when he gets the gum is Young Loki. Because he's got the little dark mane of hair. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you're just introducing like Young Loki to me. And I'm like, no, I'm not falling down that rabbit hole again. I learned my lesson.
We know that there are multiple different variations of Loki because they showed us all those different pictures. We saw the sexy Loki, the monster horned Loki, you know, all those different versions. And so we know they're leaving the options open for doing any of that.
The thing that we all have to acknowledge is that we know that the TVA's mission will fail.
Oh no, absolutely, because I've read Avengers Forever, and I know who those three timekeeper assholes are.
The multiverse is in the title of the next Doctor Strange movie. Like
spoilers. Sorry.
And also, the TVA that we have seen is so dystopian and dysfunctional. We want it to fail.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that a little bit because the lighting for the TVA kind of drives me insane, and I know it's supposed to be bad, but like,
You also see the problem the TVA has in that they believe they're all knowing and all powerful, and yet Loki uses a simple magical ability to dry himself off, and they're like, "What the hell was that?"
I am not convinced the timekeepers are still in charge at the TVA in the television series, because the Owen Wilson's character Mobius has never met them or seen them. Yeah. So I think they're still decent that the timekeepers have all that the TVA has already failed by the time we are introduced to them.
Yeah.
And they have to fail because Doctor Strange visits all of the multiverses as a plot point to tell Tony there's only one universe. We don't die.
But visiting them is not necessarily the same as them being in full flux, right?
There's a small boy behind me wearing a karate gi, carrying a gear bag. Okay. I have to leave at this point.
Go parent. Happy Father's Day.
You guys want to talk again next week, 7 days?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot for checking out the Banff Podcast, folks. And once again, this video, Ender certifies that we are a high quality professional. All right, catch y'all later. Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye. And-